Hello and welcome to another video podcast, Manna. I'm Pastor Jeff Glenn, and it's my pleasure to take you through the Word each week. And if you've been hanging out with us in Genesis, it's been a couple weeks since we've been here, so thanks for hanging in there. Today we'll be in Genesis chapter 38, and this is going to be the story, at least the beginning of the story of Joseph. Now Joseph was clearly and obviously, and if you were one of his brothers, it would be painfully obvious that he was Jacob's favorite. So this favoritism by Jacob towards Joseph kind of already exacerbated the existing normal sibling rivalry that typically happens among brothers and sisters. But this favoritism, it wasn't subtle. We know that Jacob gave his favorite, Joseph, this multicolored tunic or coat that really kind of showed flamboyantly the favor that he had. If you consider, you know, what they had in that day was typically plain colors, right? The animal tunics or other fabrics that were pretty plain. But Jacob went out of his way to actually have this coat built for Joseph. So this wasn't subtle by any means, and it fed into this already sibling rivalry that was going on. And we see as Genesis 37 opens up, some other things that kind of played into this as well. This is an opening vignette here where Joseph reports to his father some bad behavior by his brothers, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. And then they were Bilhah and Zilpah's boys. They were men, actually. And so their 17-year-old, their teenage brother, went and told Dad about some of the things that they were doing that was wrong. And we feel like, you know, it must have been egregious enough for Joseph to do this, because we don't see in Scripture that this was Joseph's character, right, to be petty or somehow impetuous, trying to get his brothers into trouble for no reason. So it must have been something that was substantial. And so we get that from here, that Joseph, of his character anyway, was at least earnest in the things that he tried to do. It's a little hard if you just read through here quickly, but this seems to be several different stories that are telling us of different situations. So it's not linear, it's just these several stories. So there's the beginning vignette here where he reports on just the four brothers, and then later when he talks about his dream, it's to all the brothers, including his dad. And so then we get into the story that's kind of sandwiched in the middle of the tunic being made for Joseph. And so whether that was like an intentional part of Joseph or of Jacob trying to show favor, rubbing it in the nose of his other sons, we don't know. But it definitely had an impact on the other sons. You know, for me, I personally have two grandsons, and they're both my favorite. And really, they are. I call one my favorite firstborn, and I call the other my favorite secondborn. And they get different age-appropriate gifts. They're for 4 years apart. And you know, so with one, you know, we have different conversations, and the other one, 1 year old, you know, we communicate, but we don't have conversations like we are. So I don't intentionally favor one over the other, but perception could be, if you were to take that way, that maybe I showed more favoritism than the other, but I don't intentionally do that. The point here is that as I read the account in Genesis, I don't know how Jacob could not see the effect of his favoritism on his other sons. You know, he himself had been the focus of favoritism. And maybe that's part of it, because he had been the positive benefactor of favoritism from his mother. His mother favored him over Esau, and she helped him gain the blessing. So to say that this was a major blind spot for Jacob is an understatement. So at any rate, this favoritism, and combine that with Joseph's naivete, which we see in him telling his father about his brother's wrongdoing, and then later in sharing about his dreams, this kind of added fuel to his brother's resentment and, you know, their hiding bitterness in their heart towards him. Now, to be clear on this point, though, that Joseph's actions didn't cause his brothers to plot against him, but they were 100% responsible for their reaction. So in another way to say it is, there's a quote that I came across, something like, despite our circumstances, we're still obligated to act virtuously, meaning that we need to have the integrity and know that our circumstances don't justify treating others poorly. And another quote regarding this matter is, our response is our responsibility. After all, it is, we should treat others as we wish to be treated, not we should treat others as we are being treated. So all that to say that Joseph's brothers had growing resentment and hatred towards him and plotted against him. And one of those reasons that they were hiding bitterness was that Joseph was gifted by God to have dreams and then to interpret those. But at least as a 17-year-old, he was kind of unaware of how telling his brothers these dreams, that specifically that they would bow to him, would affect them. You know, so yes, they did choose to take that and feed their own bitterness and hide that in their heart. But sometimes it is virtuous to spare someone's feelings or to exercise a little bit of tact in how we do that. That's always wise. So we see that even Jacob took offense when Joseph told him about this dream of the sheaves bowing to his sheaves. You know, he was offended that his teenage son was coming to him saying, "Hey, Dad, one day you're going to bow to me." And so not the best family interaction, but nonetheless, it's recorded here. And so as the bitterness and the acrimony builds among the brothers, they deliberate on what to do with Joseph. Like, we have what to do about the problem of Joseph. And so they chose to plot to get rid of him. Now we see that Reuben and Judah in this exchange here were the only brothers to really advocate for Joseph. We know that Reuben directly advocated for him he wasn't part of the plan to kill Joseph, certainly. We know that for sure. But rather, as he heard of the plot to kill Joseph, he intervened and suggested that they just throw him down into a pit with the plan to secretly return and rescue him later. So I guess he felt it was better to do that rather than to directly confront his brothers and risk his life by standing up to them directly, which, you know, that kind of underscores the perverse power that the mob has. You know, when mob violence breaks out, you know, later many people will say that they felt powerless to stop it, and so they just kind of stood by. That's known as the bystander syndrome. And the cure for that really is to stand up, you know, to be an upstander. And so we know that Reuben didn't feel like he was able to do that. He kind of got caught up in that same cycle of bystanding as well. So as he's at the bottom of the pit, Judah, for unclear reasons, you know, it's stated for money, but did he really care about the money, or was he really trying to save Joseph's life? We can only go with what's recorded, that he had this thought that he should sell them to the traveling Ishmaelites. And so that reminds us of the earlier passage where Hagar is visited by the angel and she is told about the prophecy for Ishmael in which his hand shall be against everyone. And so these were the Ishmael descendants who purchased Joseph, and so they certainly didn't have a problem buying him and then reselling him, you know, this descendant of Isaac to Potiphar. And so as we go through the story here, we see that another besetting sin besides favoritism in Jacob's life was deception. And here we see that family trait would come back to bite him in two ways in the same circumstance. So technically, his brothers didn't lie to him when they brought him Joseph's coat, but they let Jacob kind of formulate his own thoughts based on the question that they asked. When they said, "Is this not your brother? Is this not your son's tunic?" So that let Jacob kind of have his own emotions and mind kind of go where they were leading him to. So this disingenuous and deceitful question led Jacob to come to his own conclusion, the conclusion that they wanted him to have. And so in the end, it was this deception as well as his own self-deception in taking what was presented before his eyes, combined with his own emotional state at seeing the tunic torn up and all bloody. He kind of let his mind go to that place and let his emotions get the best of him. Now, we're also prone to this as well, and this story is in part a caution against that. As the trickery of Satan would be, he presents things to us and then asks intentionally leading questions to deceive us. Did God really say? Does that make, you know, or does that sound familiar? So just be aware of this emotional appeal and guard your heart. And as we're wrapping up here, we know this is only the beginning of Joseph's story. He's got much more suffering to endure before he utters the words, "What they have meant for evil, you have meant for good." And so with that, know that God is He's at work in your suffering as well. And so the encouragement here is to endure it well and look to the Lord. And so until next time, stay encouraged and stay in the Word.